Hello and welcome back. I'm on page 4 and the title of this page is Light Microscopes and Drawing Skills. And in the left box, the title of the left box is Using Light Microscopes. And I would advise you that you have that you watch a YouTube video on how to use a microscope. I think that's much more easily understandable then. But in any case, it doesn't matter. I'm going to go through these points here very quickly. The first thing that you have to do is you have to realize that not all the specimens that you want to look at are actually easily visible. Some of the specimens are clear and transparent and therefore difficult to see under the microscope, and therefore you have to stain them first. You have to add a color. There are different stains available that you can buy, and you have to use the right stain or color to color the specimen. Then you have to put the specimen on the slide and you put a cover glass on top. That's step number 2. And you put the specimen slide on the stage of the microscope, and you make sure that the correct objective lens is also in place. You now can turn on the microscope. It should already be plugged in, and then turn on the light. And then you use the coarse focusing knob to change the distance between the slide and the objective. And this kind of focuses and makes sure that you see a sharp image. And only when you see a sharp image are you able to continue. Okay, so because when you see a sharp image, you can then change the position of the object. You can move the slide using the so-called mechanical stage. These are usually 2 knobs that you can turn. And this way you can look at the different parts of the specimen of the slide. And if you, when you see something that you are interested in, then you can again use the fine focus knob to kind of look at the different levels or layers of the specimen. Especially thick specimens, sometimes you would like to see the things that are sharp in the top part of the specimen. Other times you want to see the things that are sharp on the bottom part, and you can use the fine focus knob to kind of because you're not changing the magnification, but kind of to look through the different parts of the specimen, okay? And then when you are interested in something, then you make sure that it's centered. You move the thing that you would like to look at into the center, and you can then switch on over to the next higher magnification, okay? And you can also then, of course, change the light intensity, because the higher you magnify, the lower the light intensity. Again, as I said before, I think it's probably best if you watch a couple of YouTube videos that explain this, because that's actually a more practical part here. And now, magnification calculations. You have to understand that light microscopes are able to magnify approximately 1,000 times maximum. And if you would like to calculate how large a cell is drawn in a book, for example, then you can calculate the magnification, and the magnification formula is actually relatively simple, but you have to be a little bit careful with the unit conversions. That is really, I would say, the more difficult part. The magnification is defined as the size of the image, so when you divide it by the size of the specimen, and the size of the specimen is the original, the real size, okay? So, for example, if you have an object, a cell in your book, which is drawn with a 5-centimeter diameter, then the size of the image is 5 centimeters across. And if this cell is 5 micrometers in real life, then you divide it by 5 micrometers. So you have 5 centimeters divided by 5 micrometers. And when you do that, you have to make sure that the units, the centimeters and the micrometers, you have to make sure that the units are correct. And then when you simplify that, then you can get the magnification. And the magnification is a unitless value. So there are no centimeters or micrometers or whatever attached to a magnification. It is a unitless value, okay? And there are a couple of examples in the book that do that, okay? But please understand that you can make a very rough check whether your calculation is correct, because magnifications are generally, should be quite large, okay? If you have a magnification like a 0.01 whatever magnification, is making it smaller, not bigger. Okay, so you need magnifications of 1,000 times, 20,000 times, whatever. Okay, then you're probably going to be right. Yeah? The magnification of 5 times, for example, it makes it 5 times larger. But that's not very, that's not much larger, right? So that is one way. You can use a magnification formula over here. I don't know. I'm just going to go over here. I'm just going to simply explain here. It says the following example. If you have 10,000 micrometers divided by 20 micrometers is a magnification of 500, for example. Okay. Yeah, let's move on to the next box, scale bars. And you see on page 4 on the bottom a photograph of the cross-section of a leaf. And in the top right corner, there is a scale bar with labeled 50 micrometers. So the length of this scale bar is 50 micrometers. And if you have a scale bar like that, then it's already relatively easy for you to calculate the magnification. Because what you do is you take a ruler, you measure what is the length of the scale bar in centimeters. So let's say, let's say 2 or 3 centimeters. And then you divide it by the size which is indicated on the scale bar. In this case, 50 micrometers. Okay. And then you divide it again, and then you have again a magnification value. Okay, but what I wanted to make clear here is that you do not. It's quite easy for you to calculate the magnification directly from the scale bar. Okay, so there is in the book on page 4 all a small box called SI size units. But please understand that there are lots of mistakes over here, because 1,000 millimeters is not 1 micrometer. 1/1000th of a millimeter is a micrometer. Okay, so there's a printing mistake here. 1,000 micrometer is not a nanometer. 1/1000th of a micrometer is a nanometer. Okay, and 1,000 nanometers is 1 micrometer. That is again correct. Yeah, so the first two lines in this box here are wrong. Okay, so that is basically something about magnification calculations and scale bars. And the next thing that I would like to talk about is I would like to talk about electron microscopes and ultrastructure. This is the title of page 5. And we're now at the top, in the top left corner. It says here resolution and magnification. What is the difference here? You have to understand that in order for you to have a high magnification, you need to also have a high resolution. And resolution can be imagined as kind of like the sharpness of an image, okay? And however, there is a better definition. It is the resolution is the distance, the minimum distance that the microscope is able, where you're able to see two points as being separate from each other, okay? And the closer this distance, the higher the resolution. And you can only have a high magnification if you have a high resolution. If your resolution is not high, then, and if you magnify it further, if you zoom in further, you're not gonna see more. It's just gonna become blurry. Okay, so that is, it's a little bit, if you have a mobile phone and you take a picture and you zoom in, I mean, you're not gonna see more because of that. It's just gonna become blurry. You're not gonna see more details. And essentially, light microscopes do not have as high a resolution as electron microscopes. So electron microscopes are much better, also much more expensive, but are much better in that extent, to that extent. So for example, light microscopes, they have a resolution of 0.25 micrometers. So you're able to see 0.25 micrometers as two separate dots. You're still able to see that. But an electron microscope, it says 0.25 nanometers. That's 1,000 times better, because between a micrometer and a nanometer, we have a factor of 1,000 difference. Okay, and for this reason, you can also have 1,000 times higher magnification, and the magnification of a light microscope is around 500 times to 1,000 times, and for an electron microscope, all the way up to 1,000,000 times is possible. Okay. So that is important for you to understand. So all of the ultrastructures of a cell, if you want to really look into a cell and really see the detailed structures, you need an electron microscope. Yeah? And there are two types of electron microscopes, the so-called the transmission electron microscopes or the scanning electron microscopes. And the transmission electron microscopes, this will give you a picture like on page 5 on the right. Okay, that's a picture of a transmission electron micrograph. And it kind of looks kind of flat, right? And you see the big chloroplast here, and you see the nucleus also on the lower left side. But you're looking into a cell, but it kind of looks two-dimensional, kind of flat, like a drawing, right? But a scanning electron microscope produces images of the surface of the structure, and it kind of looks like three-dimensional. So, for example, the one on the other page, on page 4, on the bottom of page 4, the cross-section of a leaf, that is done with a scanning electron microscope, and you can actually see it looks a little bit three-dimensional. It looks like you can almost touch it, you know, it's you see the surface structure of that. So in the scanning in the transmission one, you look into the cell, okay? You can look into the cell and look at the organelles inside. And in the scanning one, you can look at the surface of the structure. It looks kind of more three-dimensional. So there is a huge drawing here of a cross-section of an electron microscope. There's a voltage feed, an electron gun, a vacuum chamber, a condenser lens. Oh gosh, the point is the following. I don't think that it's really necessary to know all of these parts, okay? But what they want you to understand is that electron microscopes are much more complex than light microscopes. And also you use an electron beam to get the picture, okay? And you only get black-white images. Light microscopes give you color, and you can look at living things, you can look at movement. But the electron microscopes, the things have to be completely dry, therefore, of course, also dead, right? Because you have to dry it completely, the sample has to be prepared, and all of these things, okay? So, page 5, top right, technology and science, okay? The idea over here is that the development of the electron microscope, I think it was in the 1930s, and there was a Nobel Prize even attached to it. This has greatly helped us in understanding how cells look like, okay? It was a really important discovery. Really important discoveries were possible only because of the discovery of the electron microscopes. So technology is really important here, okay? And the detailed structure of a cell that you can see with an electron microscope is referred to as the cell's ultrastructure, okay? That is the when we actually look into the cell to see the different cell organelles. And over here on page 5, on the right side, it says the ultrastructure of palisade cells. The palisade cells are the cells in the top layer of a leaf. And if you're in higher level biology, then in chapter 9, when we talk about plant science, and then you have to know the cross section of a leaf. And the very top, you have the upper epidermis, and then you have the palisade leaves, which do photosynthesis. And not surprisingly, we can see here a chloroplast, a pretty big one. It's labeled chloroplast. We can see the cell wall even, which is made of cellulose. And yes, we can even see the plasma membrane. The plasma membrane is quite thin, okay? But with an electron microscope, we are able to see it. And we can also see free ribosomes. It's also labeled like that, the small little dots. And the nuclear membrane. And the nuclear membrane encloses the nucleus on the lower left. And all of those dark gray spots, that's the DNA inside the nucleus. So the lower left corner of the whole picture, that is the nucleus with its DNA, right? So there are, it says here, the free ribosomes, they make proteins, of course, the nuclear membrane, they protect the chromosomes and the DNA, well, of course, they contain it, yeah? But the idea is that with an electron microscope, you can really look into a cell and you can see the different parts of the cell quite well. So when we make a drawing of a cell, then this is because we know how the cell looks like by you having used electron microscopes. So now I flip the page. I'm on page 6 now. And now we look at prokaryotic cells. Okay, there are two cell types, prokaryotic and eukaryotic cells. So let me move the microphone a little bit over here. So what we're doing right now is we're now having looking at prokaryotic cells. Bacteria are prokaryotic cells. Very important, they do not have a nucleus. Okay, they do not have a nucleus and they do not have cell organelles. Okay, so the picture of the previous page with the chloroplast and the nucleus, that was a eukaryotic cell, a plant cell. But prokaryotic cells are not plant cells, they're bacterial cells. Yeah. So that is the thing, and they have the prokaryotic cells are much simpler, okay? And another thing is prokaryotic cells not only are missing a nucleus, but generally they do not have any cell organelles with membranes in them. They only have a plasma membrane on the outside, but generally they do not have any complex cell organelles made of membranes inside it. So the stuff is simply floating around freely inside the cytoplasm. This means that essentially prokaryotic cells, they have a much larger surface area to volume ratio, okay? And this means that the plasma membrane or the cell membrane of a prokaryotic cell is able to do all of the stuff, all of the work that the cell organelles and of the eukaryotic cells are doing, okay? Because for bacteria, the cell membrane is large enough compared to its volume, okay? So that is That is simply, I've briefly explained the box surface area to volume ratio, okay? And this is kind of revisiting a little bit the whole issue about the surface area to volume ratio. And if it is like this, if the cell becomes too large, then the surface area to volume ratio becomes too low, and then the cell has to divide to regenerate or to restore its large surface area to volume ratio again. So let's move on to the next box, drawing prokaryotic cells. You see over there a drawing of a prokaryotic cell, and there's also a photograph of two Salmonella bacteria. And let's have a look at the structure over here. First of all, of course, we have a cell membrane or plasma membrane. Inside, we have a so-called cytoplasm, and in the cytoplasm, we have ribosomes. They're called 70S ribosomes. They're a little bit smaller than the ribosomes of eukaryotes. Eukaryotes have 80S ribosomes. So, and the 70 and the 80S, that's just their name, okay? The S stands for the Svedberg units. It's a size indicator. You don't have to worry. Right now, it's simply called 70S ribosomes. And then in the middle, and this here the drawing is a little bit unhappy, I have to admit. It says nucleoid. That's the region containing naked DNA. But the nucleoid, it kind of looks a little bit like a cell organelle. It looks like a nucleus. It's not, okay? It's just a region. And I think you should not draw it like this because it almost looks like there is a nucleus inside the prokaryotic cell, which there is not. It should be actually only just shaded in, but there should not be a membrane at all, okay? But right now it kind of looks like the nucleoid is surrounded by membrane, okay? On the outside we have a cell wall, but this cell wall is very different from the cell wall of a plant, so don't even compare it. It's made of a different material. The only thing it's similar is that it protects the cell and gives it some strength. And they're also pili, and the pili, or pili, these are pili, these are protein structures that help the cell to adhere to surfaces. And you have a flagellum, either one or more or none, it depends on the cell. And these flagella, they rotate quite quickly and they push the cell forward, right? And what you see over here is in the photograph of two Salmonella bacteria alongside each other, you can see the very large flagellum of these bacteria, okay? So let's move on to the next box, binary fission in prokaryotes. Well, remember that I mentioned that all cells reproduce, okay? And of course, also prokaryotic cells, they also reproduce, and they do so by cell division. But the cell division in prokaryotes is called binary fission. And binary fission simply is a fancy way of saying splitting in two. What do we have to do? Well, of course, the DNA has to be first copied, because the two cells should have their own DNA, so we have to copy the DNA first. And then the copied DNA is pulled apart. The cell grows in length a little bit, it's pulled apart. And then between the DNA, we start to make a new cell membrane and a cell wall. So kind of the cell kind of pinches off, it folds inwards, and then it makes two cells. And this process is called binary fission, and it means splitting in two, okay? So you see that in the drawing over here, it's an E. coli, Escherichia coli cell. You can see that in the middle, the cell starts to fold in a little bit. They did not label that, unfortunately. I mean, it's kind of weird because that's actually the main point of this drawing is to indicate or to show you how the cell divides and how it is pulled inwards and how you make two cells, okay? Yeah, so again, you have the nucleoid, a region containing naked DNA, yeah, and that's pretty much it, okay? So you know what? I think I'm going to call it quits for right now, and in the next audio file, I'm going to talk about eukaryotic cells, okay? So all the best.